coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Old School on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. No formants, you know what that means. It means Austin Orman and DP holding down the fort for you. DP, what's good?
Everything is good. It is gorgeous. Gorgeous outside, I say. Great day. Great traffic downtown. Great traffic at the meal at the mill. And then six baseball games in the next 2 days. So, you know, well done.
Rumor has it Nick Sainert and I will be at one of the six.
Yeah.
Rumor has it.
Well, one of the six. You can go and enjoy yourselves. I'm glad you're going to be there and you can hold his hand and pet his back and make sure it's okay, right? Because it doesn't look like it's going to go well.
I know.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like the magic is magicking for the Cubs. So, but, you know, the same can be said about some of the other
they're not alone.
Matchups going on. I mean, we got 1-1 series. Everything else is 2-0. And a lot of those 2-0s are now sitting at home. there's that.
We will certainly be monitoring the baseball playoffs. That's our topic of discussion here in this first segment. Bottom of the hour, Brian Munson of Husker Online, and then your chance to win $30 to Buffalo Wings and Rings coming up at about 3:45. But first, your chance to win $1,000 is now. Get your phone out. Go to our website, theticketfm.com. You can either go to the website or text 508-777-1000 for your next cash blitz keyword. Again, we're doing this all the way through the month of October here, four times a day on weekdays. Your word for Old School, trip, T-R-I-P, trip. Your chance to win $1,000, text trip, T-R-I-P, to 508-777-1000. Three more chances for you to win on Old School throughout the course of the week. And of course, 12 more chances overall. I give words to you 8, 10, 1, and 3 here daily, 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. All right, DP, we're talking some baseball here, and it stood out to me in the reaction to last night's games, the velocity in baseball. It's been a conversation piece, but you look at Jacob Mizrosky from the Brewers, baseball's version of The Miz, not original The Miz, but baseball's The Miz. Last night, he threw three fastballs at 103.7 or faster in just one at-bat. Before that at-bat, there had been only five pitches in postseason history, according to StatCast, that were at 103.7 or faster. Got two of them over 104, did Mizrosky. Only two pitches at 104 faster before he took the mound in his postseason debut. And J.J. Cooper has done some really good stuff for Baseball America. Tweeted out a really interesting chart. You take fastballs or really any pitch under 90 miles per hour, and it is a straight linear regression in batting average, on base percentage, slugging average, and whiff percentage. So swing and a miss. The faster you throw, the worse your hitting stats get across the board in a linear, straight, perfectly linear relationship. We know there's been the conversation around velocity, but let's take this angle. Will the implementation of the automated balls and strike system coming to Major League Baseball next year have an effect on that? Will the ABS mitigate any of the effects of velocity?
No. It's too much confined natural movement in a confined space. So you do not have to reprogram the pitcher or the strike zone. The strike zone is the strike zone. Mm-hmm. And once it's known that, and hitters are very capable in doing this and identifying what the actual strike zone is. As a matter of fact, they will immediately go into off-season training over watching pitches within the new digital strike zone to have a better understanding of what that is. That's the same thing we do with on the high school levels, just letting hitters see more pitches to identify what strikes are and strikes aren't for the for that very reason. Now, when you talk about speed and adding speed and velocity to it, I'm not panicked about speed. It is speed and movement. Speed and late movement, which there's not much time the harder you throw for late movement. But there are people who have the ability to make it move late with that heavy fastball.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're able to identify how hard you can throw and get the most movement, right? So that's the other portion of it. So as a hitter, it's one thing for you to tell me, I've got to hit a fastball. It's another to tell me I got to hit a 97 mile an hour fastball versus a 94. The difference between 103 and 97 is a whole level of heat that we can't really process. The human eye is adjusting, and Major League Baseballs have figured out how to do less better with their swing, mm-hmm. which means I just need to control bat heavy portion of the bat into the strike zone for 8 inches across home plate. No matter where it is across home plate, because the plate is not going to move side to side.
Not anymore. Right? Maybe it did with the human element.
It felt like it did, right? The human umpire leaning, wrong placement, leaning on a catcher from the outside shoulder, leaning on the inside shoulder, standing above, head to the side, to the left or to the right of the catcher, or chin down on top of the catcher. It depends on the umpire and what he likes to do, and then whether the pitcher is able to take advantage of it. And the best pitchers are able to take advantage of it. The human brain is reprocessing. Just like with athletes, control of the body, toe tap, control of the body, footwork coming at the top of a route in baseball, jump stop, euro step in basketball, the Curry Harden step in basketball, the adjustments, all of those things, we're able to adjust to the newest added value in athletics.
Shoot, the back shoulder fade in football.
Right. Like, you know,
played a role last night.
Well, back shoulder throw, period. Right. It mm-hmm. wasn't a part of the game. Top of the route work wasn't done when I was in high school. We understood it, that separation at the top of the route was vital for me. And that was the thing that I excelled at, but not everybody understood it. So you weren't able to capitalize on it. So it's nasty business. If watching the Dodgers game yesterday afternoon and watching Tula Blake Snell mm-hmm. was filthy.
Yeah.
Those two were filthy. Two left-handers. And again, we have to also state right-handed heat versus left-handed heat aren't the same.
No.
It's not the same. And
on Blake Snell, 4 career postseason outings with 9 strikeouts and no more than 2 hits allowed, postseason record.
Filthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, just filthy movement, filthy late movement. He was dotting I's and crossing T's. As a matter of fact, they both were. So then it's just a matter, can you see it enough to slow it down?
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't see enough of it. You don't. It's hard to mimic. It's hard to get that rep. Yeah, you can get a pitching machine, but it's not going to give you the 5 points of elbow, glove, tip of the heel of the shoe, lead shoe, toe of the heel shoe, bill of the cap for you to measure that throwing window, the release slot that he's throwing out of.
And if you think about the Dodgers specifically, they've gotten really good at picking up on cues from pitchers, right? You can throw it out of the pitching machine, the new deal that they have where you can even put like the simulated pitcher up there with his jersey number and everything. It's not the same as the human element. Seeing the release point from a human, seeing the ticks, the cues, the timing from an actual human. And how about this, DP? Last night in that Brewers-Cubs game, 23 pitches over 101 miles per hour. That's more than the 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, 18, 19, 2020, and 2024 postseasons as a whole. You can see it, but to your point, even when you're seeing it more, even as the average fastball velocity has crept up from 2002 being 89 miles per hour to 2025 being 94 miles per hour, you're seeing more velocity. But you're still not seeing it like that against postseason quality pitchers night in, night out.
Well, postseason pitching is its own beast.
Wild.
It is its Wildly own different. Beast. One, control of pitches, the focus on each pitch, priority on each pitch, urgency is the word that mm-hmm. that we would often use in late season and postseason pitches. That, quite frankly, you had to know how many unique quality pitches you had in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those are burned during warmups, like just identifying how hard can I throw this breaker to keep it in the front half of the zone or the lower third of the zone or the upper third of the zone. I've got to test those during the warm-up throws. And that's difficult. So if you're a 98 pitch thrower in games, and you need 70 of those to be high quality strikes, on the black, not middle of the plate quality strike, but corners of the zone, late movement, those things. I was literally talking to a teammate yesterday, and we laughed because he was a really good. I want to say he was drafted fifth round by the Reds. And he had this drop down. He was a rock solid 91 mile an hour Division I starting pitcher. Chippy Garland. Chippy, 6'4", rangy, played third base as well. But he could put heat on it. But he figured out early that he needed something else. Mm-hmm. And what he found was, I remember the day he said it to me, he goes, "I found mustard from my hot dog." And I was like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "If I change the slot that I release in, if I drop down just a few inches, it runs late across the strike zone." And that's when he became a fifth round project, because that 91 looked different. Now, mind you, back in 1983, if you threw 91, you were in a rare, that was rare, rare, rare. Mm-hmm. So the idea that we're just going to throw random people up there at 101 on a regular basis, let me go play point guard. Let me go play wide receiver. I'd rather take on the 250-pound linebacker coming downhill.
The one-on-ones are different.
Right, than face a 101 two-seam late mover with a slider that he can throw from the same release point. Yeah, no, we're not doing any work. Bravo.
Ben says a couple things. He says, first of all, I might be salty that I sat and watched my Cubs wave their bats fruitlessly as they were getting fastballs blasted by them. Number two, I think the increased velocity on pitches is going to have bad ripple effects throughout the game at all levels. Going to see a lot more young arms get absolutely shredded by overthrowing. We're already seeing some sort of trickle down from that, right? The Steph Curry effect is real in baseball as well, where, to DP your point, yeah, younger pitchers are chasing velocity, right? The training is different for what they do. Major League Baseball just instituted a little bit of a shutdown in recruiting and scouting, where there's 3 months that they will not allow Major League Baseball scouts to go to showcases at the college or high school level. I don't know if that's the right fix. I'm not sure where that helps or where that hurts. But yes, we are already seeing, you know, the younger you are, the more of that specialized training you're going to get. But in Major League Baseball, it's kind of been the Shrek 2 meme. Some of you may die, and that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make. Yeah, we've seen the Dodgers, we've seen the Rays churn through arms because they have proven just how effective velocity is. It works. You get guys out. At what cost? The thing. Major League Baseball hasn't reckoned with the at what cost portion of the proceedings right now.
Well, but okay. So this is these are the venture capital folks. The folks with money at the end of the process, after you built the company, right, that just want to come in and buy it and take all the work that you've done and all the research. That's what Major League Baseball pitching is, because all the work has already been done. All of the damage has already been done because you've had bad adults in place who weren't reasonable enough to tell the 13, 15, 17, 19-year-olds, hey, you don't need to throw 14 pitches at a time. You don't need to overthrow. You don't need to, you know what, work on the mechanics of it and let's get it right. Mm-hmm. But they figure, well, if I don't put myself at risk, I don't get seen. I don't get scouted. I don't get pulled along.
Ben pulls the line. Elbow pain is temporary. 14 U championships are forever.
Yeah, well, but they're not.
It's the mindset.
Yeah, well, that scar will tell you what you paid for it when you could have conceded the. I don't know anybody that would rather have a 14U championship than a major league career of longevity. I mean, Greg Maddux.
Well, it's the coach that's never going to get there. The coach that's never going to get there is the one that wants the championship.
He'll claim it. He'll claim the victory. He'll claim all that stuff. One of the great points in the throwing mechanics, all of the body work that has to be done, the change of physicality is required. One of my kids is a kid that when he played for me, his name's Hunter Hoops, and Hoops gained some fame because they showed him after his career at Alabama throwing at one of these throwing academies, and he's popping 103 miles an hour, and they're trying to figure out, well, why is this guy not signed? Well, he ends up getting signed. But here's the thing. When he was in high school, he threw 84. Mm-hmm. He threw 84, and he was a pitcher. Like, he moved the ball around. He had control aspect. But as he developed, I think he went to like Western Carolina before he went to Alabama. And then when he got to Alabama, SEC, pressure, more things. It was after he graduated from Alabama that he got into throwing mechanics and the changing of the body. He looks like a different human now.
Well, to that point, too, Cam Schlittler, his name's come up a couple times on this program. Yep. Eric Kresty, who's doing some baseball journalism, tweeted this out. Cam Schlittler, his average freshman year fastball velocity was 88.8.
Yep.
His junior year, so two whole years later, you only gain a tick and a half to 90.4. In his start against the Red Sox at Yankee Stadium to move the Yankees on to the ALDS, it was 98.9. Over the course of the three, 4 years of development, of filling out your body, some of that velocity comes naturally. You don't have to overcoach, overtrain, overstrain, because you will grow into your fastball to some degree.
Well, Hunter was a three-sport athlete in high school. Hunter was an elite basketball player. He could have gone to college just to play basketball, 6'4.5", 6'5". He was tall, rangy anyway, great shooter. He would have been a perfect Duke wing, right, back in the day. Then decided to play football so I can get used to using a different set of muscle, getting more physical and understanding the difference. Going to a smaller Division I and learning how to handle the time management and what it took to be a college baseball player. And then moving to Alabama, where the competition level went up, the competition level at practice went up. He got better. And then once he got out and was undrafted, then he could really get to work. And it's, okay, I need to start with the lower half. If I put all of this on my arm, I'm going to rotate cuff myself out of baseball, right?
Real quick.
Right, real quick. So the easiest way not to do that is to learn how to throw. Actually learn how to throw. Mm-hmm. He knew how to pitch. Now he had to learn how to throw, and then he wanted to get stronger. And he got stronger, and he figured it out. Twins draft him. I want to say he got promoted all the way up Double A, Triple A this year. In his first year in the organization, and he's a power pitcher. He's a power pitcher. I mean, he's learned, and to go through this process, Evan Minarvik, who played at Northwestern, same sort of deal. Logan Lex, I went through a bunch of guys who, when they were in high school, they learned the cerebral part of it. They learned the mental part of it. Then they learned the high IQ, how to get people out, ball movement, that sort of thing. And then when the body was ready, then they got into the heat game. It's the body's more built for it now. There's less wear and tear. It's better for them than if you're doing this all along. Now, they are in the body management business now. Mm-hmm. Once you're signed, the focus can be whatever you want it to be. But if it's that I need to take care of myself, no matter where I am in this thing, you're one type of athlete. There are those people that will throw themselves on the grenade, take the shrapnel, and then end up in the league, but you're there for 2 or 3 years because you're getting hurt. Now, again, it goes back to bad coaches, parents that don't know, that simply don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And it is, you know what? I got to ride through my son. If he makes it to the league, I'm a success. If he doesn't, I'm a failure. Club coaches, travel ball coaches, that quite frankly are the wrong people to guide and take care of your kid's body. And then college coaches. Just to, again, they're paid professionals. They will throw sacrifices out to the baseball gods when they really don't need to. And it makes my heart hurt to be around and watch coaches do that. So it's all the adults in the room. The young people don't know until it's too late. And then ultimately then you're scratching and clawing to get there and to be included. So then you make more sacrifices and cause more pain.
And I think there's so little that can be done from the hitting end. Unless you're going to make the bats lighter, because we're already pretty close to the end of the spectrum when it comes to human reaction time. Like, these guys that are playing Major League Baseball have some of the quickest reaction times in the world. And they're
Spider-Man.
Literally. Sense. Yep. And there's so little they can do about it. It's always an educated guess. You rarely know what the pitcher is throwing. But even if you guess right, it's hard to touch 95 plus.
Well, they're trying to get smarter. And that's the difference maker, is that if you're stronger and you do less at the plate, right? So if I shorten my swing, where quite frankly, it's me smacking my hand against the door. If I can do that and catch a baseball, if you could, by rule, in our humanity, if somebody can throw 103 at you and you can catch it standing sideways in a squat, then you should be able to hit it. You should be able to hit it. The question becomes, are you strong enough to catch the baseball with a bat and then push, force it
the other opposite, way.
The other direction? It gets complicated when you have to be situational. You need to be directive. You know what? I need to go opposite field. I need lift. Oh, situation. I need a ground ball instead of launch angle. The mentally lazy thing to teach a high school and college baseball player, launch angle. Stop it. Stop it. Launch angle will take care of itself if you are concentrating on getting the hand from its deepest point to the strike zone and the striking area as quickly as possible.
You said the word situational. We got a couple minutes left here, and this was another thing that was on my list of things to talk about. Did you like the Phillies bunting Bryson Stott?
No.
Explain why for people, please.
No, because if that's the common thing that you do on a regular basis, yes. If you don't have anybody in that situation who could put the ball in play productively, solid at bat, right? Mm-hmm. That tells me you're conceding the at bat. You're conceding the play because you need to get. But here's the thing. If you do that while the runner's at third base, I may have some understanding. I'd still question you. But there, runner at first base, sure.
But runner second?
Score at second base in scoring position.
And nobody out. And you're down to three.
You literally limited what you could do. To tell me that nobody could put the ball in play, you didn't have anybody on the bench who in that situation could put the ball in play. I understand that sometimes maybe you saw the third baseman was three steps too deep. Maybe you saw that.
Which he was not, because they moved him in.
We saw that, right? Maybe the pitcher's tell is that when he throws the fastball, he's going to overcompensate, overthrow, and end up closer to the first baseline than the third baseline. Okay, fine. If you don't see that and you don't know that to be true, I'm not putting you up there in the most critical at bat of the game to bunt.
To give away an out.
Yeah, I because you still need another hit. You still, whatever you got to get that runner in, and yes, getting him to the third changes some of the pitches that are thrown to the batter behind, right? Because now the breaking ball, the dirt, out of play, right? If there's a runner on third, I'm more likely to get something up in the zone that I can drive. You're not going to throw the wicket breaker because pass ball gets you a run score. So I understand trying to get him there. I would just hope that I can put it in play and get him there naturally.
Without having to bunt.
Bunting is, it is a lost art. I used it a lot. I have to fully confess. I used it a lot. But that's because we identified a lot of other things that had to check into place beforehand. I don't know what the Phillies saw. I don't know what their practices were. I don't know what the drills were. But I would hope that a left-hander coming off the bench, I don't know that I want him bunting to third base.
Well, I don't want him. One of the better defensive teams in baseball, in the Dodgers.
Yeah, I don't. Again, I try not to question coaching decisions because, again, he knows his players. He knows he knows the situation. He knew the base runner. He knew everything. And you could have blamed some of this on the runner for not breaking clean enough. But that's neither here nor there. You forced them to make a play, and they made the play.
And they did.
That's the part. Like sometimes I just want to make them make a play because I don't think they have it in them. And then you're surprised. Like, oh, well done.
Yeah,
you
did it.
I wasn't going to give you credit for that. That may have been the case. Don't know. It wouldn't have been what I did, but that's why I'm not the coach of Philly. And that's why I'm not coaching in the National League Divisional Series because he knows more than I do. So
I do just think it's interesting to take both sides of it, because if you think about the game flow, Philly was rolling. Trinan didn't have it. Vezia didn't have it.
Shocker.
You know?
We had not seen that before this year from the Dodger bullpen.
So they don't have it, and you have a runner on second base and nobody out. You've gotten like four straight hits, or three straight guys have reached.
Copy success.
And, okay, you like that. And then the numbers, right? Because I'm the numbers guy. This is where I come at it from. The run expectancy with a runner on second, no one out, you're expected to score 1.13 runs per situation. Mm-hmm. Run expectancy with a runner on third and one out, 0.968. Okay, so essentially one both ways, but in the long run, runner on second, nobody out is a little better than runner on third, one out. How about this, though? Chance of scoring with a runner on second and nobody out, 61% of the time in Major League Baseball this year. Runner on third with one out, 66.3% of the time. Okay, so what happens there, DP? Your odds go up in terms of tying the game, but do you play to tie the game in baseball?
Well,
you play to win the game.
Well, again, situation and circumstances, you're down three runs. So the comeback, it becomes vital. Mm-hmm. Like you have to get even to get ahead. So first things first, let's get even now. But I still would say, who was hitting behind that hitter that bunted?
You had 8-9-1. Eight okay. Put down the bunt.
So maybe you want to take away the nine hitter stepping up, runner on third, with a pitcher that can throw breaking balls in the dirt. Right? By forcing him to not throw breaking balls. I need fastballs for this number nine hitter. I need fastballs up, right? Because he can drive the fastball up. The fastball down, he could line out and get us in trouble anyway.
Roll over.
Depending on what you knew about their relief pitcher and your number nine hitter. And then the number one hitter, Trey. Well, we know Trey in that situation, a two-out situation. I kind of dig what Trey would do. Now, Trey would have been more likely to bunt just for the base hit.
For kicks. Yeah.
But so those situations matter. What happened after that matter. And you have to look at all of it. He knew his team. He knew the matchups that he had in play. He had a report right in front of him telling him, if this, then that. This is what it said. They just didn't execute.
And what happened next was Roky Sasaki became the first player in Major League Baseball history to record either his first two wins or first two saves in the postseason in a career. Pretty cool stuff for the Japanese import. DP, appreciate you sitting in.
Thank you, kind sir.
We have Brian Munson of Husker Online recruiting update, and then your chance to win $30 to Buffalo Wings and Rings with two Lincoln locations, all ahead on Old School.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back in, and this is Old School 93.7 TicketFM.com. No Jay Foreman, Austin Norman hanging out with you. And instead of Mondays with Munson, we got Tuesdays with Brian Munson of Husker Online. Brian's with us on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Brian, you're a busy man traveling around the football world. How was your trip to the Great White near north of Buffalo, New York?
Well, and we did go to the Great White North. We went to Canada on Friday to go see Niagara Falls and did all that, and we went to watch the Eastern Michigan University of Buffalo game, which was honestly a pretty decent game too. They were a double-digit underdog and took them into overtime and went for two a la Tom Osborne and lost. But it was a wonderful thing. That the Bills game, other than, you know, probably my one complaint was the referees, the experience was amazing. Just I'll tell you what, Nebraska fans and Buffalo Bills fans would get along great. They are very similar, cut from the same kind of cloth, very welcoming. We didn't know anybody there. We got kind of brought in by several tailgates to kind of just hang out and eat and drink and laugh and talk and figure out what the story was about everybody there. It was wonderful. So very, very, very much like being there in Lincoln on a Saturday.
And that was your send-off to the Bills Stadium. Are plans in the works to get to the new one soon?
There is. I already told my wife, I said, it's going to be a must. We're probably thinking it's year one. We weren't planning on missing any of the younger son's football games. He wasn't playing varsity to start out the season. So we thought, well, it's really, we're not going to lose anything. We're not going to miss any games of his. We're going to go see the older kid, you know, watch him coach. And then the youngest got promoted to varsity a week ago. And so we were watching actually his game in Canada as we were at Niagara Falls. So kind of a fun experience, but at the same time, you know, had to miss it. So it was wonderful though. We're going to plan a little bit differently though. We're not going to go out on Friday before. We'll go out on Saturday before, and we'll hang out for an extra day or two after.
Well, now, you know, you got the plans, you know, the situation, you know, the circumstance. And you can do moving forward. You had a great experience in Buffalo, Brian. What did it sound like the experience was for a pretty decent sized group of visitors to Lincoln for a Saturday's game against Michigan State?
Yeah, it was another great weekend. You know, everybody just mentions the fans. And I think the one part here that I thought was like going to be the most interesting to most interesting thing to kind of go and talk about was going to be, hey, what were your thoughts on like the game, the offense, how well you thought you were going to kind of fit in, et cetera. And there were some interesting answers. You know, I caught up like with Reese Wilmus and he, you know, he's a 2028 offensive tackle from Lawrence, Kansas. He was very zeroed in, you know, watching the offensive line, but wasn't like, you know, critiquing them to the point like where he was kind of seeing them struggle a little bit. But I did get some of those comments. So like, Jordan Agbenoma from Buford High School, actually he's from Grayson High School in Loganville, Georgia. He mentioned that he definitely saw the offensive line like start out hot and then struggle. And it was very interesting to kind of hear that, you know, being said, because you just didn't know like where it was going to go. I mean, overall, like the weekend was great. I think you and I would agree, like if there was like true context to like what happened on Saturday, it's kind of like what Matt Rhule said, I think, in the locker room and maybe even like in the presser yesterday, which I didn't catch, was probably, you know, like a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, they don't win that game mm-hmm. on Saturday. They probably don't find a way to win. And they did this year. And I think that says a lot about it's a big thing to show like where this team has kind of come from and how they're developing and how they're believing in themselves, et cetera. But I think though to kind of hear the critical comments, you know, coming from some of these top recruits, it was a little eye opening to hear it, you know, hear those guys kind of say that, because they're very focused. They're hyper-focused on what's kind of going on in that situation. It wasn't just like, oh, yeah, I was there to have a great time. These guys were zeroed in. They were 100% zeroed in on like what was going on exactly in that moment. And they were aware like of like just, you know, and it was mentioned like, look, you had some bad penalties. You know, you had some breakdowns, you allowed back to back sacks. Like those were things that I don't think I've ever talked about it with anybody, honestly. Hmm. And it did get mentioned on Saturday night. So something very, and like the very interesting though was like just like that was like the part of it. Otherwise, very positive. It's going to be interesting to see how Nebraska kind of moves forward. You know, I'm sure they would bring most of these guys in every single weekend if they could. But it's going to be interesting to watch in the winter, in the spring, up to like the official visit stuff. Like, how are they going to kind of manage, you know, bringing in all these players? You know, how does the board kind of develop? And I think that's got to be something that's got to be on Nebraska's mind right now is, we think we can bring all these guys back. How do you kind of have them rated on your board? And what are like the events and what are the things that you want to do? Is this a junior day guy? Is this a spring visit guy? Like a spring practice guy? Those are some things I think that are really going to have to start churning in the gears a little bit, churning in the minds of the coaches in the recruiting department, just to say what's going to make the most sense for the next time that they come to town. So yeah, it was another great weekend. It's going to be very interesting to see how Nebraska kind of takes all this data and processes it and moves forward into the winter and spring.
The offensive line has been a topic over the last couple days, of course, since Nebraska's allowed 12 sacks over the last two games. When you think about recruiting offensive linemen, Brian, is that a position where you have to do a bunch of projection and hope or assume that a guy will grow into a frame? Or is that a position where you have a good idea of what a kid's frame is when he's a junior or senior in high school, and then it's all about developing the technique at the college level?
Yeah, it's more the latter. I think you've got some players that, you know, they got the frame, they got the athleticism, they don't run the right offense, you know, and there's going to, and I think you've got some varying levels of maybe development that you feel like you've got to kind of go through, or maybe you've got a guy that's got a little bit of a sloppy build, you know, like somebody that you feel like you're going to have to bring him in and burn it off to put it back on again. I think though, it's more the latter. I think that they just, you know, it's they're looking for the right frame to where what's really where everything kind of starts at. That's ground zero for all of it. That's a baseline. There's a box that needs to be checked, and you know you're not going to go out there and just become so overwhelmed because you see a 6'1" offensive tackle in you know some high school game on Friday night to where you want to go ahead and offer them, because there are prototypical numbers that go along with those positions. And, you know, usually on those outside spots, you know, they're 6'4" at a minimum, you know, and then you get up to like Teddy Prochazka, you know, in type of length where you're 6'9", 6'10". I mean, you got Matt Erickson that's committed. That's almost 6'8". So you've got to kind of stay within like what you prototypically are kind of looking for. And honestly, you kind of model that after like, what's going on in the professional levels, right? Like you want your guys to be able to move on so you can kind of have the success story to be able to go back and point to them. In order for them to get to the pros, they don't have guys that just, you know, that usually don't fit the bill, like within the metrics of size, you know, or athleticism, to be honest with you. I mean, they've all got to kind of do all the similar things, right? So yeah, it's really about like, you got guys that you don't predict position as much as you find the right frame, and you either have to go back to it and burn it off, or you have to stack onto it. And I think that those are basically the two things you kind of have there. But you really have an understanding, you know, if you feel like this is a tackle. Sometimes tackles work in, but you very rarely find interior guides that slide out. It just doesn't work that way typically, just because the height requirement that goes along with it.
We're talking with Brian Munson of Husker Online. He's with us on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Brian, one of your most recent pieces just a couple days ago was Nebraska making a push for a receiver in the 2026 class by the name of Josiah Teasley. What's the lowdown on him?
Yeah, that's going to be a really interesting one to watch. And I'm actually writing up, I was in the middle of 3 and out as I was kind of thinking about what we were going to talk about today. And he had some really interesting remarks for us on Saturday night. You know, he's a guy that was just in Happy Valley, Penn State, you know, Pennsylvania, for the Oregon game a week ago. And I don't know about you. I mean, living in Dallas, Texas, there are a few Penn State alum down here, and they are just absolutely giddy about and sell the whiteout that's there at you know, in Happy Valley, basically, anytime it comes up. Like, it is like the scenario. It is the environment. There's nothing better that can beat it nationally. And I guess maybe coming from a different lens, you know, kind of hearing that, it's like, oh, okay, well, then I guess I got to kind of maybe potentially like think that that's special and all those things. Well, then you listen to Teasley, who was there for the Oregon game, and then you put him in Lincoln for, I wouldn't say an average ordinary Big Ten game against Michigan State, because it's rarely average and ordinary, particularly as like the day goes on, the start times get a little bit later. But Teasley was blown away. And he had some really kind of like revealing comments to me about, like, you know, and comparatively, like the Go Big Red and the Sea of Red versus the whiteout. Like he was very much, you know, more impressed with what happened this last Saturday than two Saturdays ago against Oregon. So I thought that that was a very telling comment, you know, from him, and he's going to come back, you know, and things have been moving pretty quickly with him. He just got the offer from Nebraska about a week ago. So for him to be in Lincoln on Saturday, lets you know, like how important and maybe, you know, how big the offer is to him. He's technically a Virginia commitment. He's going to make an official visit to Vanderbilt at the end of the month. He's going to take an official visit to Penn State, I think, on November 8th, and he's tossing around the idea of either coming in for USC or for Iowa. But I think Nebraska has to feel pretty darn good about where they sit with him right now.
And he seems to fit the type that Coach Dekel Schwartz has liked in terms of being a bigger-bodied receiver.
Yes, absolutely. So that's something else that, you know, I think with the last two offers, with both to Teasley and to Milan, who Milan just continues to like pick up massive offers. I think he just picked up an Oregon offer the other day. I think that, you know, they kind of fit that bill of just a big, right? Like there's really not a guy like that in the room. You got Quinn Clark. I'm not going to sit there and gloss it over that Quinn Clark's not in the room. He is, but I think they're looking for, you know, I think they're looking for another big to add to the room. Get a little bit more physical, you know, maybe they got a style here now that they want to kind of go back and address and grab another guy or two that have a little bit more size to them. And Teasley went as far as to say, yeah, there's not somebody like me that's there on the roster right now. They got a guy that can do a lot of different things. You can put it up to me, you know, on a fade route. You can go ahead and tell me to go get it on a post. But yeah, he thinks he can beat guys, you know, straight up just kind of outrunning them. And he definitely knows that he can go up and get the football, you know, when you just tell him like, hey, just we're going to go give you a 50-50 and go get it.
It'll be a little quieter in October than it was in September for Nebraska. Huskers are only home one more time in the month. Brian, what are you monitoring here over the course of the next couple of weeks before Nebraska gets another chance to host visitors for Northwestern toward the end of the month?
Well, you obviously, whenever you have these situations come up now where, you know, Nebraska is going to be on the road, what, this weekend they go to Maryland and next weekend they go to Minnesota?
Yep.
Is that the order? Okay. So you do have to kind of watch because there is the possibility that Nebraska is going to send some coaches out maybe ahead of time out on the road, you know, while they're out there kind of going to Maryland. Maybe there's somebody on the East Coast that they want to kind of go out there and take a closer look at. Obviously things are stacked on top of each other in the Maryland area and the whole Northeast. So it'd be easy to get around and kind of check some things out, some various guys, if that's what they wanted to do. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if that's the case, if they send the coaches out, like kind of like an advanced party kind of thing and let them kind of get out there on a Thursday, Friday and rejoin the team, maybe late Friday night, like get in late so they can kind of be part of the action. Because I think that they're also, they're not 11 o'clock starts either, right? They're like 3:30 and 7. Isn't Minnesota a night game?
Yeah, no, Friday
Minnesota's
night.
On Friday night.
Friday night. Yeah.
So you're going to have some opportunities, I think, to send some folks out there and let them kind of get out and check out some players, go to some schools, talk to some coaches. So that's going to be the part I'm going to be kind of interested in. And then I think as you work towards the end of the month, the big news is going to be bringing him in for Northwestern. I think you have N and M and N, and then you get to U finally. So you're kind of going in the alphabetical order. So you got Northwestern, and then you get into hopefully USC, which I think everybody's kind of hoping is a later start. So if they could get that later start on November 1st, they can bring in another big weekend of players. There's a lot of guys that are talking about already coming back on November 1st. So that would be a huge thing for Nebraska to get a later start time.
We will certainly be monitoring that ourselves with the great help of Brian Munson of Husker Online. Check him out, huskeronline.com, Brian Munson _ on Twitter. 3 and Out coming out tomorrow then, Brian?
Tomorrow morning, going to have that. Going to have the box score with all the recruit stats. Possibly tonight. It kind of depends how quickly I can kind of wrap up a couple other sections on 3 and Out. Otherwise, that'll be up maybe like midday tomorrow.
All right. I don't want to keep that from the fans, so I will cut you loose there so you can give the people what they really want, which is the box score and the 3 and Out. Brian, glad you made it back safe from your trip to Buffalo. Thanks as always.
I appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you next week.
Brian joins us on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. That's where they understand the importance of exceptional service with local heart. One segment left on Old School for the day. We'll wrap it up after this.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Wrapping up Old School here on a Tuesday. The hour flies by. We're giving away $30 to Buffalo Wings and Rings right now. I have a trivia question for you. Big shout out to our friends at Buffalo Wings and Rings with a couple Lincoln locations. First of all, just down the street from us, we're at 11th and O. Our friends at Buffalo Wings and Rings are in a very, very easy to get to location at 68th and O. Definitely go check them out there. Or down south, 40th and Old Cheney-ish, Williamsburg Village, officially for the second location. All right, here is the question for you. How many Big Ten teams are currently ranked in the top 10 of the AP poll? How many Big Ten teams are currently ranked in the top 10 of the AP poll? Texter number 5 with the right answer. You will earn the $30 to Buffalo Wings and Rings. Question pops up because we have Ohio State and Illinois. I'll give you that one of those two teams is ranked in the top 10. That, of course, being Ohio State. It's the return of the Illibuck Trophy, which, for those of you who didn't know, the Illibuck Trophy is a turtle. That's right. It is the second oldest trophy in the Big Ten. It was first awarded in 1924. The first Illibuck was a live turtle. An actual, honest-to-goodness, real live turtle that passed away two seasons after first being awarded. There have been 10 different wooden Illibuck turtles awarded since then. They put the final score on the back of the shell. But this is an interesting sort of series. I went to Ohio State's website to look up the series history. Come to find out, Illinois has not beat Ohio State in Urbana-Champaign since the 1991 season. That was a 10-7 win for the Illini. Since then, they've won a few times in Columbus. They won 18-16 in 1992. They won in Columbus in 1994. They also won in Columbus in 2000 and or 1999 and 2001, as well as 2007, magical year for the Fighting Illini. But it's been since, again, it has been since 1993. That's the last time that Ohio State beat Illinois on the road. Otherwise, all the losses to Illinois have come in Columbus. Funny sort of underrated sort of factor in that rivalry. Let's scroll through the responses here. One, two, and IQ Crew, you are the winner. It is three Big Ten teams in the top 10 of the AP poll. Of course, Ohio State is at number one. You have Oregon at number three and Indiana at number seven. It's that top 10 matchup between Indiana and Oregon that'll hold plenty of intrigue for us to talk about throughout the week. So IQ Crew, you win the $30 to Buffalo Wings and Rings. We'll give away $30 more to Buffalo Wings and Rings coming up on Thursday. Big thanks to DP for sitting in. Big thanks to Brian Munson of Husker Online for being the guest here, giving us a great look inside the Husker football recruiting operation, what's in the cards for them. We'll be back tomorrow. Got a full show on a Wednesday, except it won't be we. It'll be Jay and it'll be Harrison. I am on my way out to Big Ten Media Days in Chicago with Nick Sainert. We're going to have a blast. Stay tuned to the ticket for our updates from out there in the Windy City of Chicago. Again, for DP, for Brian Munson, this is Austin Norman saying thanks for listening. Don't go anywhere. We got Outside the Box with the Lincoln Stars coming up next on the ticket.